راديو ايرن. We present Big Jim, a radio play of the 1913 strike by James Plunkett.
It is between 7 and 7:30 on the night of Friday, the 31st of January, 1947. The funeral of Jim Larkin, agitator, trade union leader, city councillor, twice deputy of Doyle Éireann, is moving slowly through the dark and snowbound streets of Dublin. It is followed by a silent army of workmen, men and women who, over a period of 40 years, in the bitterest moments of their struggles against poverty and oppression, had used his name as a rallying cry and a slogan of defiance.
Where's your equipment?
Hand to God.
Oh, now, Gran, I told you, you must let me hold your arm.
Them fellas never looks where they're going. They'd run over you as quick as look at you.
Mammy said I was to bring you back straight and I wasn't to let your arm go at crossings. Oh. You nearly walked onto that bicycle. It wasn't the man's fault at all.
Whish, child. I hear something. Hmm?
I hear it too. It's a band. There must be a band.
The soldiers, I suppose. I hear the sound of their feet.
Oh, I can see them. No, they're not soldiers. They're dressed in ordinary clothes, and there's women marching too.
No soldiers at all.
No, only men and women and a hearse and the band. Everybody's stopping to look.
Ask somebody who it is. Quick, there's the jewel.
Mister, my granny wants to know who it is.
Tell your granny, love, that it's Jim Larkin. Big Jim, God bless him.
Ah, Jim Larkin, ah, me poor soul. Is that who it is now?
They're bringing them to the Union Hall in College Street to Lyon State.
Dear.
And on Sunday they'll take them to Haddington Road Church. Did you know him at all, ma'am?
I only met him once, when I was in trouble and looking for his help. And he didn't send me away empty-handed.
That's one thing he always was, a good friend to those in trouble.
The drum beats, and the streets echo a funeral music.
Because we follow a good man to his last end.
He was our friend and our leader.
Our leader and also our friend.
Consider what he gave us.
His eyes to see the road we couldn't see for ourselves.
His tongue to speak the words we could never find for ourselves.
His courage to face the batons of the police, and the hunger in the eyes of our children.
He taught us how to be strong. And it was very simple, he said.
March shoulder to shoulder.
March step with step.
An injury to one is the concern of all.
Look at the police. Look at the police. Look at them. Well dressed and well fed. Who feeds them? You do. Who clothes them? You do. And they batten you for it. But why? Because they're organized and disciplined, and you're not. Organize now and stand together, brother with brother. The great are not great. The great only appear great because we are on our knees. Rise up!
Organized and stood together, brother with brother,
all for each, and each for the other.
The docker, the furnace hand, the crane man, the coalie,
the singer out, the knocker up, the girl in the biscuit factory,
the carter, the railway man, the heaver, and the packer,
the greaser, the stoker, The yardmen for the knacker.
We were despised, and he chose us. For us he endured the whip of hunger. For us they bloodied his mouth with the butt of the pistol. They marked him with the red wheel of their hatred.
He demanded the fruits of their labor for the poor and the dispossessed. He said, I will breed a flame of terrible anger in the meek.
Helen! Halt! Helen! Dismiss!
There you are, Mr. Bannister. The usual. I suppose.
Usual be damned. A drop of malt, that's what I'm having. And you can make it hot.
Right, Mr. B, right. The sugar is a bit scarce, though.
There's always something a bit scarce. Suppose I told you the money's a bit scarce, huh?
Poverty's no crime, thank God.
It's a hell of an inconvenience, though. Oh, God, me poor feet are frozen. You don't make the bloody dead marches all right in summer, but in winter, with the slush on the ground and the wet seeping into your boots, you'd wish to God they'd step it out a bit livelier.
Well, this'll bring the life back into you now, if you drink it down while it's hot.
Hey, don't worry. It won't get much of a chance to cool. Oh, be God.
Was there many at the procession?
Hundreds.
You wouldn't think there would be, and the night that's in it.
They were there all right, half the city. Them that loved him and them that hated him. I followed Larkin all my life, and while we were marching, I kept thinking to myself, Jim, that's the first time they ever rested easy and yourself out at the head of a procession.
Be God, he shook them up right enough.
He gave us a shaking up too sometimes. He'd let us shout at you that he'd carry from here to the Phoenix Park. Especially if he got the smell of a few points from you.
I know. He was the devil against the drink. But sure they turned on him. The way they turned on everyone else. God help the leaders in this unfortunate bloody country. He was the greatest man since Parnell.
You're an old lark and die hard like myself.
No. But I admired him. I'd only come up to Dublin to serve me time when he was flung out of the National Union of Dock Labourers. The year he founded the Irish Transport and General Workers Union.
1908. I was only a couple of years married.
It's a long stretch back. There you are, Mr. Fitzpatrick. The usual, I suppose.
No. A small one. Hot. My feet are frozen. More power, Pat.
More power, Fitz. I didn't see you marching.
I was marching, all right. I went straight up to the hospital.
So did I. It's not going to be the same, is it, Fitz? Dublin without the big man.
I remember what they used to call us, Pat. Larkin's rabble of Cathars and Dockers.
Yeah, they called us a lot of things since you and me got together. Of course, we've got respectable this few years back. Labour courts and conciliation boards and tribunals. Be God, when you and I were soldiering, Fitz, they didn't set much store by conferences. I suppose they reckon the belt of a baton did the trick quicker. Whosomever, here we are, old son, still able to swallow a half or two.
1911. You know, that's 36 years ago.
36 years? God, you'd hardly credit that, no?
At a moment of public sorrow, old men remember more clearly. Mention a name or a date, and there is much mutual reminiscence.
1911. I remember now, Annie and me had our two kids. Mary, who came first and was named for Our Lady, and the other called Jim, because I hoped he'd be a fighter. I remember two rooms furnished better than most, and Annie, who was worried because of the talk of strikes.
Oh, Annie, where are you after with the milk jug?
Maybe you tell me where you were. Your dinner's ruined. I can't keep it hot for 3 hours.
I had to go down to Beresford Place. Larkin was speaking about the docker strike.
You've been there 3 times this week. I suppose your home is only a sleeping house and an eating house.
Listen, Annie,
the end of it will be you'll get mixed up in one of these strikes.
There's many a good man mixed up in it already.
Well, there's one of them waiting for you upstairs, Pat Bannister. I left him to step out for a sup of milk. Mrs. Hennessy borrowed the last drop I had.
The devil ever, she don't bother with that woman.
It's a pity the sympathy you lavish on your brothers leaves you none to spare for a poor woman with a young baby.
Mrs. Hennessy's never done having babies. She's a look at rabbit.
Not Fitzpatrick. She has it hard, and that husband of hers always idle. Oh, here he is coming up the stairs.
Ah, holy God.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Fitzpatrick. Good evening, Mrs. Fitzpatrick. Isn't it a lovely evening? God bless us. Do you know what? That wife of yours a picture. Oh, you've caused me a proud man. Yes, indeed. But what was it I wanted? Ah, yes, yes. A match, Mr. Fitz, if I may make so bold as to trouble you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ah, yes, indeed, a picture. With the milk jug in her hand there, she looks no more than a slip of a giggle.
Oh, you've a tongue well larded with flattery, Mr. Hennessy.
But I mean it, every word of it. Knowing a dream you had two young children.
Maybe I'd better go and get the milk before you've me head turned on me. Now, don't forget, Pat Bannister's waiting above for you, Bob.
I won't. Don't be long.
Oh, no, I won't.
Oh, yes, indeed. A fortunate man. Well, now, that's very disappointing.
If you'll excuse me now, Mr. Hennessy, I
could have sworn I had a cigarette somewhere.
Oh, I've someone waiting for me.
Most disappointing. I suppose you couldn't... I shouldn't trouble you.
Here, take it. Terrible to be stuck with a match and find you've no cigarette.
I wouldn't have dreamed of asking.
Oh, I know that, I know.
But since you offer it so generously, I will. Oh, God and his blessed mother reward you. Hearts of gold, that's what the pair of yous have, and blessed for it. Any time I'm passing and the door is left ajar, I peep in at your two comfortable rooms and I say to myself, what a beautiful thing marriage is.
Hennessy?
Yes, me love, I'm here. What a grand thing marriage is, I say to myself.
I know you're there. I'm listening to your gossip for the last half hour.
A few brief remarks with me good neighbour, Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Then will you let Mr. Fitz into his dinner and hold this infant for me till I get me old? It has me on the road to
Ridley's
and itself on the road to convulsions.
All right, I'm coming. I'll go and help her. She's our poor hands full. I'm under a great obligation to you.
Hennessy!
For the love of God, go up before that woman's voice brings the house down.
I will. I'm coming. All right, I'm coming.
Hello, Pat.
I suppose I surprised you, huh?
Oh, I met Annie on the stairs. She told me you were here. I'd have been up sooner, only I met the touch of Hennessy on the stairs.
I spent me time admiring your clock. It's a lovely piece of workmanship.
It's Annie's. My mother gave it to her. Did you hear it chime? Wait, no, I'll put it on 5 minutes.
God, it's like a musical instrument.
The youngsters love it.
That's a handy thing to have when the kitty runs short. Like a good bit of bedding or a gold ring.
You mean pawn it?
Ah, if a fella was stuck.
Oh, not to save our life. Annie values that clock. She says it's the only bit of decency we have. Sometimes I imagine it's a bit too elegant for the two-pair front of a tenement in Brunswick Street. How's the strike going?
We need all the help we can get.
Now, you're having it tough, old son.
Oh, no tougher than the rest.
When there's trouble, you dockers always get the rough edge of it. Since Larkin came to town, you've been taking the brunt of the trouble.
There's something about Jim that makes you feel it's your privilege to fight.
Well, that's all right, but there's the wife and kids. Not much of a privilege for them.
Ah, that's what they all say. Look what you're doing to your wife and kids. Well, I say, look what they did to your wife and kids. Packed them 10 together in a tenement room so that they could starve and rot in each other's company. It's better to fight and starve than to retreat and starve. Surely to God that's a sensible way of looking at it.
You starve a bit quicker when you're on strike, that's the trouble. That's what some of us don't care for. We don't notice it when it's slow.
Well, if we all stood together, we wouldn't starve for long. But we need help.
Whose help?
Well, yours, for instance.
You've already got it.
Oh, yes, you're with us in spirit. Takes a lot of that sort of stuff to fill a point. Why don't you join the union?
We have joined the union.
You have? Since when?
Since this evening.
You mean your crowd is in trouble?
We are. We've had it lucky for a long time, but today it happened. First load after the dinner break, we were told to get some stuff from a warehouse in the south wall. We yoked up all right, but on the way we were stopped by a man named Conway. A Barney Conway, I think. A big, broad-shouldered block of a man. He said it was stuff some of the scab labourers had managed to stack by before you stopped them. Well, we went back to the yard and said we wouldn't take this stuff. The gaffer said we could take it or jack up. So, we jacked up.
Be God, you did. What happened?
They locked us out, that's all. No further questions asked or answered. So we went down to Liberty Hall in a body and joined up.
All my talk about the clock there. I was figuring out to ask you to give us a handout.
You remember when we were at school? What we used to shout at a big fella when he bullied us? H-O, H-A.
Aye, hit one, hit all. That's the stuff, Fitz. Aye, Annie won't like this, though.
Well, what can we do about it?
Well, you're used to a bit more comfort than the rest.
Why? Because Annie's brother is a bit of a pull with the gaffer. We always managed to get the lows that paid best. And got the work steady, too, which is more important. Well, That's finished anyway.
Ah, we'll be all right, Fitz, both of us. Wait and see. We'll stand together. We'll get down to the hall now.
Oh, before you go, Pat, I want to know, what's this tainted goods business? I never heard it before.
That's the stuff you wouldn't handle today. That was tainted goods. It's a new idea, Larkins.
Tainted goods. My juice. It's got a bit of eloquence about it.
It's our new weapon. Good luck, Fitz.
So long, Pat. There you are, Annie. Don't bother getting out of my dinner for a minute. I've something to tell you.
Well, if you're going to tell me you're on strike, I've heard it already.
It travels fast, doesn't it? Who told you?
Over in the shop and in the street, they all have it. But of course, you leave me to be told by the neighbours.
I couldn't very well tell you on the stairs, could I?
You could have kept out of it. What cause have you to strike? My brother saw you got good work. You had nothing to complain about.
I was asked to break a picket of my mates. Was I to do that?
No, your mates were more important than your wife and children. Will your mates feed them when they're hungry or pay the rent to keep a roof over their heads?
That's what I said I wanted to talk to you about. Some things are more important than houses and hunger.
Are they more important than your wife and your children?
Aren't the neighbours' children important too, Annie?
Your own comes first. They come first. In the eyes of our neighbours, we had too much, that's what it is. They were delighted to tell me you were on strike. Begrudgers that were used to nothing but tea and bread and dripping and never had a boot in their foot. What do they care? They haven't a clean and comfortable home to lose and a steady job.
The railway porters that have walked out because they wouldn't handle the stuff from the timber yards. They had steady jobs too.
They had their heads turned by Larkin.
They're not in Larkin's union.
And the cowardice. Oh no, you couldn't tell me you were in Larkin's union.
I wasn't. We joined it in a body tonight.
All of you?
Nearly all of us.
Oh, so some of them didn't. Some of them the cute ones. Oh, I know them. They'll make the balls for you to fire. Why have you to be the fool?
It depends on what you mean by being a fool.
I mean the fools that have their heads turned be Jim Larkin and his speeches.
Annie, come over to the window.
What's the hurry? There'll be plenty of time now for looking out windows.
I want you to look out for a moment. At the poverty and the degradation that most of your neighbours live in.
I'm not like you. I don't have to look out of a window to see it. Isn't it living in the house with me? The Hennessy's above us that have nothing, and the Barrett's down below us. And Mrs. Mulhall, that's nursing her poor man since his accident 2 years ago. That's why I don't want strikes. I don't want it coming into the room we live in.
You can see it better from a window. It's down below you and you can smoke a cigarette and think about it. Open that window and you get the smell of it rising up to you. You can wonder that half-starved chisellers playing beds in the path can sound so happy. Look at them now. Dozens of them. Some of them haven't their beds of sleeping, so they put straw on the floor. They'll grow up and get married and go on raising more kids to drink tea out of jam jars and sleep on straw and torn. There's 80 or 90,000 men, women and children living like that, while the people they work for go off with the quality to the balls and receptions in the castle and the park. A pinch of snuff or a pint of a payday. That's about as much as they can look forward to. Do you want our children to be like that?
But that's what they will be like if you get mixed up with Larkin.
Do you think you're always going to know someone for them who has a bit of a pull with a gaffer?
Well, we'll educate them. We can do it if you keep out of trouble.
And they'll be known as Mary Fitzpatrick and Jim Fitzpatrick, reared on the bread that was taken from their neighbour's table, the son and the daughter of a scab.
I've no right to say that.
Why wouldn't I? Not what you're asking me to do. Look, Annie, I didn't go around looking for this trouble. I just stood face to face with me today with a hungry man with honesty in his eyes took hold of the reins and called me brother. I knew then where I stood.
Well, I hope to God you're as sure of yourself in 6 months' time.
Oh, I'm quite sure of myself now. Better put a match to the lamp. It's got dark. There's someone at the door.
Who is it? Come in. Oh, it's you, Mrs. Mulhall.
I'm sorry to trouble you and your husband in for his meal, ma'am, but I was hoping you'd lend me a teaspoon. The one we had got lost on me, and me husband has to have his medicine.
Right, I get you one now.
You'll have it back as soon as I find me own. No light to search for it now. And I'm afraid to put it on anything else, because he's not to get more than the fill of a teaspoon.
Is there ere a change in him, Mrs. Mulhall?
Sometimes he thinks he's able to move his legs a bit. But sure, I think it's only his poor mind. I'll bring this back to you.
Look, it'll be time enough now whenever you want to bring it back.
God bless you, ma'am. I won't fail.
Give me a match. I light the lamp.
That's what Larkin wants to destroy. A world where people drink out of jam jars and a teaspoon is a luxury.
Sure, there's only the young boy yearning for her. How could the poor woman have anything?
You think of Cartha can't get crippled too?
I only think of the children. They can suffer more than us. I'm afraid for our children. I'm afraid of what the employers might do to them.
The proposition before the meeting, gentlemen, is that a company to be called the Dublin Employers Federation Limited be formed with the object of affording mutual protection to and indemnity and to promote freedom of contract between employers and employees. May I once again say how gratifying it is to address a gathering so representative of the employers of this city. I read in your response your realization of the very real threat which Larkinism, with its disregard of established agreements, its avowed mission of discontent, its outrageous doctrine of tainted goods, represents to the commercial life of this city. Larkinism is synonymous with anarchy and strikes at the very foundations upon which our society is built. I move.
I formally second.
We shall now have discussion.
A question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes?
Am I to understand that freedom of contract between employers and employees means, in effect, freedom to import free labor and to use this labor to replace employees who may be on strike?
That would be one of our weapons. I may say it was used very successfully against Larkinism in Cork in 1908.
It led to serious bloodshed.
It's the duty of the authorities to take whatever measures they think fit to protect the community against incidents.
I'm a little bit uneasy about this. It may lead to very serious trouble. Have you thought about it that way?
Sir, I must ask you to be so good as to observe the rules of debate. If you wish to speak, speak. But at this stage, we can hope to make very little progress by way of question and answer.
I don't wish to speak. Not yet, anyway. I'm just thinking.
By all means, think, sir, but pray do it silently. Yes, sir?
I feel I can set the doubts of our colleagues at rest, sir. I don't think that any of us wish to encourage public unrest or to take a stand against legitimate trade unionism. I may say personally that I've dealt with some of the older and more respectable trade union leaders for many years, and that our relations have been, on the whole, cordial. But trade unions must regulate their business as we have a right to expect. What's the picture that confronts us? There have been strikes in Cork, Wexford, Sligo and Belfast. Mr. Larkin has left behind him a trail of wicked and wanton mischief, an insupportable weight of trumped-up charges of exploitation and even more aggressive demands. Now he has the lower classes of Dublin in a turmoil of unrest. There are three strikes in progress as I speak. His new doctrine of tainted goods creates a situation in which no employer is safe, even those who have given way to this autocrat's demand. And I regret to add that to save their business from ruin, perhaps many have. The proposal before us is that we combine to defeat this mischief. I see no logical reason why employers should not enjoy such a right, when it is now being practiced not simply by the artisan classes, but by the rabble of the city, by the carters and dockers, the porters and messenger boys, the factory girls and the domestic servants. If we do not now decide to present a united front to this syndicalism or socialism, or perhaps more accurately, this Larkinism, then I must warn all here that each of us individually must become in his turn the victim of gross intimidation and extortion.
Jim, this is Bob Fitzpatrick, the chap from Bentley's the Carriers. They gave us a leg up a week or two ago at the docker strike.
Come in, friend. Sit down.
Well, thanks, Mr. Larkin.
There are no misters in this movement, friend. You can keep your cap on. You boys did a good job. Barney was telling me about it.
Well, some of us. A few of them were prepared to go ahead and handle the stuff.
Christ had won Judas out of 12 and he was God. What do you expect?
Well, I'm learning how little can be expected.
You know what the saying is, brother. Blessed are they who expect not, for they shall not be disappointed. How many did Bentley employ?
You mean as carters or all over?
All over.
Well, counting yard men and carters and clerks...
Don't count the fellows with the white collars. They'll step in and drive your yokes any time there's a dispute, just to please Bentley and get the photographs on the paper.
Well, not counting the clerks, I'd say about 40.
How many are with us?
25. There'll be more with a bit of pressure. The usual few waverers afraid to be out.
Neither fish, flesh, nor good, Red Heron. Oh, we've that kind of animal around the port, too.
And you're all back working. There was no victimization.
He said not this time. But if it happens again, he says the ones who go out can stay out. He says he won't tolerate Larkinoids.
Oh, he won't he? We'll see about that. What rates is he paying?
Well, he has a system of his own. Some of us earn about 15 bob a week. But before the strike, I sometimes knock down a sovereign myself because the wife's brother is a bit of a pull with a gaffer. I needn't tell you, that's all finished now.
It's a damn good job. Why should you get more than anyone else? That's another thing we've got to root out of this rotten town. Discrimination. Paid more because the boss likes the color of your blue eyes.
Well, Fitz is a straight fella, Jim.
Fitz is all right. It's the system. What about ours?
Well, the usual. Start at 6:30 in the morning, knock off at 6:30 in the evening. On Saturday, he usually lets us finish up around 4 or 4:30. After 6:30, he pays us 6 months an hour overtime. But that's only in the last 12 months.
You can tell Mr. Bentley he's going to have his belly full of Larkinites before we're finished.
You're going to take him on, Jim, huh?
We'll tell him we want an increase. If he doesn't pay, we'll write him up on the worker. Who he is, where he came from, what he's mixed up in, what his father was if he had a father. We'll give him a paragraph and send him a complimentary copy. Well, I want a word with Pat here. It's nice to meet you, Fitz. We're all in this job together.
Thanks, Jim. And good luck on whatever you do.
A man makes his own luck, friend.
See you outside, Fitz.
Right.
I like your friend, Pat. He's got a head in him. Get him on number one branch committee and get a few more like him if you can.
Whatever you say, Jim. There's Joe Somerville, too.
Who's he when he's at home?
Same job as Fitz. Stubborn as a mule, be good.
Well, get them round. I'm expecting trouble.
You're a peculiar class of a man. With 3 strikes on your hand, you say you're expecting trouble.
Oh, this is different trouble. This Employers' Federation.
Aye. Aberdeen doesn't want them to import free labor. I saw it in the paper.
Do you think these gentlemen give a damn what Aberdeen says? When they've got their few rotten shillings at stake, they won't do it now. They'll wait. Not because Aberdeen or anyone else says it, but because they haven't the guts. We've beaten them for the moment. But one man will do it sooner or later, and that's Murphy. What are the others? Small fry, but Murphy owns half the city. He's in the newspaper business and the drapery business. He owns hotels, he controls the tramways and the railways, and he's big interest in Britain and West Africa. Do you think this industrial octopus can lie easy with 20,000 members gathered in this union? It's coming to a fight, not with one employer, but with all employers. And William Martin Murphy is going to be their Napoleon.
You just give us the word, Jim. We'll fight.
I wonder if you know what you're going to be asked to fight.
We want better wages and shorter hours.
You want more than that. You're going to drag yourselves off your knees and out of the pit. You're going to show this rotten city that when Christ said the kingdom of God is within us, he meant all of us, not just the fellas with the frock coats. We'll teach the world that Jack had a soul as precious as his master's. They preach that, but they don't show any signs of believing it. That's what you'll fight for.
That's a bit of a program, Jim. When do we start?
Brother, we've started already.
January the 30th, 1913.
The City of Dublin Steam Packet Company.
Strike on here! Strike on here!
The Dublin Silith and Isle of Man Company.
Strike on here! Strike on here!
The British and Irish Steam Packet Company.
Strike on here! Strike on here!
The Bristol Steam Navigation Company. The Clyde Shipping Company. The Dublin Shipping Company. Messrs. Ted Castle McCormick and Company.
Strike on here! Strike on here! Strike on here!
Join Jim Larkin's union.
Strike against low wages. Face that mayor about.
Strike against excessive hours. Heel up and leave it there.
And future mate, the last man in is going to be the first one out.
Throw down the ramming rod and drop that stoker's shovel.
Loosen the belly band and heel up that carter's yoke.
One cigarette between us, brother. You're welcome to a share.
Aye, thanks, mate. Half a fag, I always say, is better than no smoke.
The situation in this city has become deplorable.
To these people, the denunciations of the clergy appear to be as of little consequence as the condemnation of the politicians.
The threat of hunger is ineffective as the batons of the police.
The shipping companies have given away too much. They encourage the spirit of anarchy, which will wreck the society we have shaped to serve our ends. It is morally and spiritually anarchical.
I blame the government. They are weak and vacillating.
I blame the law, which isn't sufficiently severe.
I have always looked to the churches to defend society.
I blame ourselves, and I propose to take steps, gentlemen.
Where are
The Independent is after sacking all the messenger boys that belong to Larkin's union.
Oh, where did you hear that?
I met them when they were on their way across to Liberty Hall. Mr. Murphy called them all together and talked to them himself. He told them they could stay on if they left Larkin's union, but none of them would, and he sacked them on the spot. They're all having a meeting. Willie Mulhall said to tell his mother.
Oh, God help her, she isn't bad enough.
That's what I said to him. It's a shame to yourself you should be, I said to him. You with your poor misfortunate mother and your poor misfortunate invalid of a father to be going out on strike and them in the height of their trouble. It's bad enough, says I, to see the men going on strike. But do you think, says I, that a man like Mr. Murphy, says I, is to be expected to take imprudence and defiance from a gathering of green children like yourselves? But I might as well have talked to the wall. They all went by me singing with their red hand badges stuck in their coats.
Oh, well, I'll tell Mrs. Mulhall now. Sure, she worries about Willie when he's late.
Well, tell her where she'll find him with his comrades down at Liberty Hall, yelling up, larking and singing the red hand of boo.
August 21, 1913. Notice from the directors of the Dublin United Tramway Company to employees in the parcels department. As the directors understand that you are a member of the Irish Transport Workers Union, whose methods are disorganizing the trade and business of the city, they do not further require your services. The parcel office will be temporarily suspended. If you are not a member when traffic is resumed, your application for re-employment will be favorably considered.
Fritz, close that bloody window, will you? I can't hear a thing. This is Joe Somerville, Jim. I brought him along. We want to know what's the program. We can't let down the men in the Independent and the tramways.
I've been saying we should call out the tramman. There should be a meeting of the committee.
What do you want a committee meeting for?
Get a decision on the situation.
Do you think I'm waiting for you or a committee to give me a decision? I'll give the decision when the time comes.
Don't see much sense in having a committee, so.
Easy, Joe. For the love of God, easy.
I don't expect you to see sense in it, Somerville. Do you know what the situation is?
I know Murphy sacked your mates for being members of this union and the tramman are still walking away. They should be called out.
Maybe I'd like to read this circular. Every Tom, Dog and Divil has been offered employment with the tram company. For months now, Murphy's been carrying a double staff. When our fellows walk out, he's a bunch of hoodlums to take over. And every one of them has sworn not to have any truck with this union.
He's been at it since we made the wage demands from the tram men last year.
He's telling them now he got no demands. Read the circular, Fitz.
I have been. When was this given out?
Yesterday. Read it.
Circular to our drivers and conductors. The directors have received no demands and they have already announced that they would not consider any communication from Mr. Larkin or any of his emissaries. The directors have no doubt about the loyalty of all but a small number of their men and they have no apprehension that a strike will be attempted and no fear at all, if it is attempted, that it will last a single day. In case serious trouble arises, the cars will not run after dark and the company are assured of the most ample protection for their men by the forces of the Crown. For a crew that are so sure there's going to be no strike, they're taking a hell of a lot of precautions.
If you pull the trams, Jim, there'll be a bloody revolution.
There's going to be a revolution.
You're going to call them out?
We should have the committee.
Ah, shut up, you and your committee. What's your orders, Chief?
Trust in God, Pat, and keep your powder dry.
Irish Independent, Saturday, 23rd of August, 1913. 100 pensioners of the DMP were sworn in as special constables at police headquarters Dublin Castle yesterday by Chief Divisional Magistrate Mr. Swift. All leave has been suspended for the DMP and officers and men on leave have been recalled. Arrangements have been made to quarter large numbers of the RIC in disturbed parts of the city within the next few days. It's also been stated that large numbers of pensioners have been sworn in to discharge the duties of jailers during the present unrest. Arrangements are in readiness to call out the military at a moment's notice if their services are required.
But of course, Pat, they don't expect any trouble.
I'm wondering why Jim hasn't moved.
He's thinking a way out. He should have called the committee.
He's waiting his time.
Murphy says he's broken, Larkinism.
The city is lousy with police. I wonder what the horse show visitors will think of that, huh?
Oh, I see it now.
What? What is it?
Monday begins horse show week. He's waiting for Horse Show Week.
When, Jim? When? We're waiting.
Tomorrow, Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. Tell them to leave the cars in the street.
Pass, please. Pass, please.
Oh, conductor.
Yes, sir.
Does this car go to Ball's Bridge?
Well, sir, it does and it doesn't, sir.
What the devil do you mean?
Well, no, sir, it's hard to explain, but you might as well have a seat and take the weight off your legs anyway. Hold the rein. Pass, please.
You'd better call the fellow again.
Yes, I should think so. Conductor.
Yes, sir.
Does this car go to Ball's Bridge or does it not?
That more or less depends on the time, sir.
What the deuce can the time have to do with it? You either go to Ball's Bridge or you don't.
Tell me the time and I'll tell you the answer.
The time? The time is exactly 10 o'clock.
Then it doesn't, sir.
You see, incorrigible. I warned you about it. What on earth are you putting in your buttonhole?
My trade union badge, sir. The red hand. I'm not allowed to wear it on duty.
Then what the devil are you putting it in your buttonhole for?
Because I'm no longer on duty, sir. I'm on strike.
Hey, Pudner, it's 10 o'clock. Huh? It's 10 o'clock. Right, me hearty.
Right, old son, I'll pull the trolley off.
On strike. In Horse Show Week.
Yes, well, Mr. Larkin claims there are 500 men involved.
Nonsense. We've calculated the number of drivers and conductors who stopped work is about 150. They can easily be replaced. In fact, they've already been replaced to a large extent. We've more loyal men at our disposal than we should require.
You have the situation under control, then?
There'll be no dislocation. We have ample guarantees from the Crown. The strike is already broken. It won't last a single day.
You seem to have stopped every earth on Mr. Larkin.
I believe I've broken the malign influence of the man and set him on the run. It's up to other employers to take similar steps, and they will. And that, I believe, gentlemen, puts everything in order. So I propose now to read out our resolution. We hereby pledge ourselves in future not to employ any persons who continue to be members of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union, and any person refusing to carry out our lawful and reasonable instructions or the instructions of those placed over them will be instantly dismissed, no matter to what union they belong. Is this agreed?
Yes.
The proposed form of repudiation is as follows. All employees will be expected to sign it. Those refusing to do so will be dismissed. I hereby undertake to carry out all instructions given to me by or on behalf of my employers. And further, I agree to immediately resign my membership of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union, if a member, and I further undertake that I will not join or in any way support this union. Signed, address, witness, and date. And that, gentlemen, I trust, is the end of Larkinism.
Builders' Labourers' Union.
Hello, this is the Builders' Association here. We've reports here that your members are refusing to sign the undertaking against joining Larkin's union.
That's right, they won't sign.
But I don't understand this. You've told us more than once that your union's not friendly to Larkin. And there's no Larkinites in the trade that we on our side are aware of.
Well, that's beside the point. We're signing no form of repudiation.
Well, I feel you don't appreciate what this means.
We know exactly what it means.
Look, our relations in the past have been pretty good. Your present attitude just doesn't make sense. I warn you solemnly we intend to lock out.
And I warn you solemnly we're not signing. There's 1,000 men in this union and not one will sign.
You're prepared to see 1,000 men walk in the streets, then?
That's your responsibility.
But can't you see the effect if you do sign? It gives your union the monopoly of the trade.
Look, you can talk to tomorrow morning. We're not signing.
Employees of the timber trade.
We won't sign.
Employees of the coal trade, the carrying trade.
We won't sign. We won't sign.
Workers of Dublin, 400 employers have made a pledge.
32 unions say to hell with your pledge.
A stroke of the pen. Mark an X if you can't write. Name, address, witness, date. It's quite simple.
We won't sign. We won't sign. We won't sign. We won't sign. We won't sign.
The scabs are running the trams.
The soldiers guarding the coal.
The clerk is soiling his soft white hands.
Pray for his cowardly soul.
Blacklegs, donkeys, scabs!
Look at the troopers. Look at the police. Look at the scabs. Look at the trams.
Give us a bottle. Give us a stick. Give us a crowbar. Give us a brick.
Look at them now till it drives you mad. Taking our bread and the little we had. Horse and saber, baton and gun. Fight to the drop, fight to the run.
Rowdy Boses, Rowdy Boses!
Dirty scabs, dirty soldiers!
Rowdy Boses, Rowdy Boses!
Riots in Beresford Place, Talbot Street, Marlborough Street.
We're assured of ample protection by the forces of the Crown.
Riots in Sackville Street, Brunswick Street, Earl Street.
Arrangements are in readiness to call out the military at a moment's notice.
Riots at Eden Key, Burg Key, and Ringsend.
We've been assured of ample protection.
Riots in Angel Street, Redmond's Hill, and Cuff Street.
Arrangements are in readiness.
Stare the chaser! Stare the chaser!
Rowdy Boses, rush the police!
Murderers! Murderers! Army head is split open!
I can see the bullies behind you fingering their batons. They don't like you to shout so loud. They're thanking their stars. They're armed and you're not. But if Carson can arm his braves up in the north, we can arm too. The employers have been promised not only the police, but the soldiers. Very well. My advice to you is to be around the doors and the corners, and for every man who falls on our side, two must fall on theirs. Brothers, the mission I've come to preach is the divine mission of discontent. They've degraded and enslaved the poor of this city. They've bought for a pittance 100,000 souls. But the moment has come to break that tyranny. They'll crucify Christ no longer in this town.
Have been listening to Big Jim, a radio play of the 1913 strike by James Plunkett. This was the cast: Jim Larkin, Rory Roberts, Bob Fitzpatrick, Frank O'Dwyer, Annie Fitzpatrick, Una Collins, Hennessy, Arthur O'Sullivan, Mrs. Hennessy, Peg Monahan, Pat Bannister, Joseph O'Dea, Joe Somerville, Thomas Studley, Mrs. Mulhall, Florence Lynch, her granddaughter, Daphne Carroll, Chairman of the Employers' Federation, Lionel Day, the priest, Charles McCarthy. Other players were George Green, Brendan Burke, Leo Layton, Eamon Kelly, Neil Tobin, Chris Curran, Eamon Keane, Deirdre O'Mara, and Norman Doyle. Effects were by Tim Danaher, and production was by John Stevenson.